From 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Travis DiNicola. Happy New Year!
Yay!
Today I'll find out about a new art therapy program at St. Vincent Cancer Care.
I'll learn about the Indiana High School Architectural Design Competition.
And oh, what a night it will be when I chat with the actor playing Frankie Valli in the tour of Jersey Boys. Plus, there'll be our arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. St. Vincent Cancer Care has a new art therapy program thanks to a Livestrong grant. Travis DiNicola spoke with artist and art therapist Joni Rothenberg about the program and the new mosaic she created with the patients and their families.
Joni, welcome to Art of the Matter. Great to have you in our studio, and Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you.
Well, thanks. Even though we are recording this technically before the new year, we can still celebrate the new year. Let's start with, I want to learn a little bit more about you and your background before we talk about the program at St. Vincent and connecting to all that. You're an art therapist.
I am.
Tell me about your background and your training.
Okay. I received my master's mm-hmm. at Lesley College. I started off in Israel, where I studied for 1 year, and then I went to Boston and had training at Lesley, worked with conduct disorder boys and hospital through Harvard Medical School with eating disorder patients.
Mm-hmm.
And during that time, I sort of blindly went into the field of art therapy before it was popular about 20 years ago.
Sure.
I chose it because there was no master's program in Israel. My husband was getting a master's.
Mm-hmm.
In Tel Aviv, and he was in medical school,
mm-hmm.
so it ended up being a great fit for me, but it helped me develop as an artist, and it fulfilled my passion to work with people and help them express themselves through the arts. So
you know, you mentioned 20 years ago. I mean, I remember sort of at that point, it seemed as though there were a lot more art therapy programs all of a sudden opening across the country, and it was interesting because there were certainly some people going into it because of their background in the arts and wanting to learn more about the therapeutic side. Other people who were more from a therapy standpoint. Where were you in all that? Were you coming at it as an artist originally?
I wanted to get an MFA,
mm-hmm.
and there wasn't a master's program in Israel. So, I wanted to continue my education. I
mm-hmm.
wasn't sure where. And in Israel during that time, the average age was 40 or 50 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Women had needed like to renew their career. And I was the youngest candidate, and now it's very different. I mean, you see most art therapists going directly from college straight into art therapy.
But, sure. And just to be clear on what art therapy is, because I think that some people have the misconception that it's more like art education, that there's a sense of, maybe, you know, we have a group of at-risk kids that we want to work with and sort of then go in and do an art program to keep them off the streets after school. That's actually more of an art education program often, though it's used in that sort of social service way. That's not exactly what art therapy is. Art therapy is actually dealing with people who are patients, whether medical patients or also from a therapeutic psychology standpoint, right?
Right, right. So it can be used in a lot of different ways, and a lot of times it looks very similar to art education,
mm-hmm.
But it's to have a therapeutic, safe relationship and have them allow the art to help them express their feelings and concerns and to work through their process with using art.
So describe to me, please, the program that is going on at St. Vincent.
Okay.
Yes.
So it's actually, I wasn't chosen because I'm an art therapist. I was chosen as an artist. It's a LiveStrong grant where 20 hospitals in the United States were chosen to... They saw a need to allow patients to express their fears and concerns and desires through art on the chemotherapy unit.
Okay, and since it's LiveStrong, it is specifically for cancer, oncology.
It is specifically for cancer. Mm-hmm. And when I was reading through the grant, I thought, well, let's try to incorporate a little bit of, the Women of Hope were so excited about receiving the grant that I encouraged them to let me do another project sort of side by side for the LiveStrong grant, and that was a mosaic project. The mosaic project really had no intentions to be a art therapy project, but it became such a therapeutic model for the hospital as we developed. And I can tell you...
Yeah, please do. In what way?
Okay, so my cousin from Israel, Yael Buchsbaum, and I met with patients with cancer in a group setting and asked them to help us conceive an idea of if they had to imagine a place that they would find hopeful or inspiring when they entered the hospital, what would that look like? So we talked about a place where there would be water and a stream, trees for life, butterflies, sun, trying to think what other images, rocks for the hard times that they had to go through. And they helped us design that. We went and painted a large painting of that. And my idea was to create a piece where patients and family members and caregivers and physicians and nurses would all come together and create one piece at a time, a mosaic.
Okay.
And
when was this being done?
This summer.
This summer, okay.
Yeah, we started it in June, and then we started tiling it in August.
Okay.
And September. What happened was we converted a lobby where there's a lot of fear and anxiety and questions and boredom into a place where patients would come and...
You made it into a messy art studio.
We didn't make it into a messy art
studio. You didn't, no.
We didn't. It was...
You wanted to.
I knew that I would have been fired if I would have destroyed the furniture. So we took smalti, which is glass tile from Mexico, and one piece at a time we created this mural where they would sort of match the colors of the painting that we had created. But what ended up happening was it became a safe place for patients to express their fears and concerns and their relationships with the family members that were undergoing treatment or the survivors themselves. And I saw something happen that really surprised me. I saw patients come in that weren't planning on that didn't have treatment at the time, that just wanted to come during their lunch hour. I saw mothers or grandparents come in with their loved ones and talk about how nervous they were and hopeful that everything would be okay. We had the youngest child was 3 and the oldest woman was 95 that came and created art.
And how big is the final mural that's hanging there in the lobby?
It's 4 by 6 feet.
4 by 6 feet. Do you know how many pieces of tile are on there?
No, but 90 people helped.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
So and a metaphor that we used was take something broken and to make it into something whole again.
Yes.
And there was just a lot of
hope.
That's
lovely.
Yeah. It was really it was a beautiful project. I mean, it turned into something so magical between my cousin and I with the painting and trying to give a voice to all these patients. But then when they put their own voice into the piece, it became something so beyond what we had expected. So when you walk in, shimmers and glistens right when you came into the right when you come into the cancer center. It's the first thing that you see. Catches
now,
all the light.
So obviously, I mean, this piece is incredibly special for the 90 people who participate in making it. For patients or families who are coming in now and walk into the lobby and see it, do they know what it is, or how do they know
Well, it's being unveiled this week, we'll see how.
So by the time this airs, it'll be up. I mean, but will there be signage or?
There'll be signage. Mm-hmm. We let the patients and their family members vote on the title.
Mm-hmm.
And because it was such a success, we're doing a 3-panel piece on the 6th floor.
Let's go back. What's the title that they voted on?
Every Day's a Gift.
Every Day's a Gift. Okay. And so there'll be more projects than it sounds
yes.
like.
Yes, so this is the beginning. And Livestrong, who it didn't really fit into the category of their grant, and it was funded by Women of Hope. Livestrong was so in love with the project that they asked if they could commission us to make one for their lobby in Austin.
Congratulations.
Thanks.
That's fantastic. So when will you be doing that?
Well, we're waiting for the size
What?
But we have someone from the cancer center that has undergone has been treated for breast cancer. She is going to meet with the head people in Austin, and we'll see.
Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Terrific. I mean, it sounds like you could be doing these at hospitals all over the country.
We'll see.
And you mentioned pieces on the 3rd floor as well, so new mosaics that you'll be working on, is that right?
On the 6th floor.
On the 6th floor, excuse me.
And that's the oncology unit. So I'll be actually working with patients when they're undergoing transfusions, creating their own art, and we'll also have 3 panels out in the lobby when people are waiting or visiting family members or, coming out of their hospital room, they'll be able to participate as well. So
it sounds like this has been a really moving experience for you.
It has. And I have to say the hospital has been so incredibly generous and welcoming to these ideas. I mean, I started creating a large mural in the hospital as a painting because I thought it would be nice to paint in the physical space of the hospital and let patients see the process of a creative process of how difficult it is to really create a piece of art. And I realized that patients wanted more than that. They wanted to get their hands dirty and get involved in something. So I just took it one step further.
And be a part of it. Also, of course, you want to give thanks to Dwayne, is it Canola?
Yep.
Yeah, as the program coordinator for that, who I know has made a lot of this possible. It's great that St. Vincent has really embraced this project and
yes.
made this happen.
Dwayne and Fouad, who's in charge of the cancer, the whole cancer care, have been incredible. They've really put the arts at the forefront, and their goal is to make the journey that these patients are going through and their families the easiest and the best as possible.
Joni, thank you so much for coming into Art of the Matter. It's been great hearing about this project, and I can't wait to see it.
Thank you.
Travesty Nicola with artist and art therapist Joni Rothenberg. The new mosaic she spoke of is located at the St. Vincent Cancer Care Center. You can get more information and see photos of the mural at stvincent.org/cancercare. Again, St. Vincent, that's stvincent.org/cancercare. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
Indiana High School Architectural Design Competition is a way for students interested in architecture, design, and related fields to experience design firsthand and to learn from real professionals. It also teaches great lessons in design appreciation for students and parents who don't go on to pursue any of the design fields. Sharon Gamble invited CSO Architect and American Institute of Architects member Brandon Farley, a champion of the competition, to our studios to learn more.
So this competition's been going on for more than 4 decades, so I have to ask,
You're still kind of early in your career. Did you grow up in Indiana, and were you aware of this competition?
I did grow up in Indiana. I went to Carmel High School. And I remember being aware of the competition, but it wasn't something that was sort of pushed. So I didn't actually participate. And now that I look back on it, I think I would have really gotten a lot out of it if I would have participated. And so I try, you know, when I'm selling the competition to, or telling other students about the competition, I try to tell them all the advantages and all the things they can get out of it. Like, I like to tell the students that entering in the competition is a way to sort of dip your toe into being an architect, and you get to have all the fun of being an architect without
any of the stress.
Yeah, without any of the bummers, like, you know, budgets and building codes and gravity.
Yeah, and, you know, the silly rules of physics, right?
Yeah. You'd be surprised how accepting architects are to kind of thumb their nose at the rules of physics. I think it's something that we all secretly want to do.
Which leads me to a personal question. How did you get interested in architecture?
We had, in high school, we had a really great architecture program in that what would happen is for 1 year, the architecture students would design a house, and then there would be a competition at the end of that semester where one of the houses would be chosen. And then the next year, the building trades class would actually go out and build the house.
No way!
And then they'd sell the house, and then the funds from the sale of that house would go to fund the program for next year.
That's really sophisticated.
Yeah, it was great. And there's actually, you can drive around Carmel and see, you know, all these houses that high school students have built and designed if you kind of know where to look. And so there's sort of a living history of all these houses sprinkled throughout the city.
So did you design one of them?
I did not design one of them. Mine was a little too far out there. I think I was a little too creative too early. But it was what really interested me was that, you know, the process of design and sort of the way it worked, and it was this kind of wonderful blend of art and science.
That's what I'm intrigued by, is that it's kind of the ultimate left brain, right brain field, because you do have to deal with the math, you do have to deal with the physics, but you can't be restrained only by the pragmatic or practical aspects. If you're not creative, forget it.
Right, exactly. There's no you know, one right answer, and there's no there's nothing right or wrong about mm-hmm. a design, but at the same time, you know, a bad building leaks, or a bad building wastes energy, or it doesn't, you know, properly recognize where it is on its site. And all those things are very sort of, you know, there's right and wrong answers to those sorts of things.
Or a bad building makes people inside it feel uncomfortable, or people outside it looking at it feel
right.
Like something's not right.
Right. You can tell that it doesn't belong, it doesn't quite fit there.
Yeah. So I guess it gets into the Sherlock Holmes part of our brains, too, in a way.
Right, right. And that's what's great about the field, is because whether you're a right-brain person or a left-brain person, there's things that can really sort of interest you. I mean, there's people in our office who are very good at drawing window details, and there's also people in our office who are very good at deciding where those windows go. And, you know, you sort of need both those people in order to make something, make a building work.
Sure. What's your particular specialty?
I've always thought that to me, design is what really motivates me. Mm-hmm. It's what sort of gets me going. But at the same time, I think you can't be a good designer unless you understand how to put a building together. And so the first few years of my career, I really focused on trying to learn all the things that you needed to know in order to be a good designer. And that was, so I feel like I've had to learn how to be technically proficient in order to be design proficient. So it's kind of a vague answer. I'd like to say that I'm a jack of all trades, but really I'm more focused on design.
Sure. Now, the program you described at Carmel High School is pretty sophisticated. I'm guessing a lot of Indiana high schools don't have architecture programs. They might have mechanical drawing. They might have CAD/CAM in their computer labs. Is that true?
Yeah. Every high school is a little bit different. A lot of them will start out, drawing with simple drafting, where you're simply learning, you know, the basics and the fundamentals of drafting, and
I have to ask, is this drawing the old-fashioned way, or is this drawing on a computer?
As far as the competition goes, it's drawing however you can best convey your design.
Okay.
So typically, what happens is that the students that enter would be in an architecture class,
mm-hmm.
But we've had students who are not in any sort of class who've just entered on their own, kind of on their own accord. We've had homeschooled students entered. And then whatever they medium they feel like they can work best in is the medium that they can present to us in. So whether you want to sit down and do it, you know, really old school with a pencil and a ruler, or if you want to use some sophisticated 3D modeling program, we're open to everything. However you want to send your design to us, we're happy to look at it that way.
Now, that said, you're very open about the media used, mm-hmm. but you're very specific about the challenge, about the what it is they're designing.
Exactly. Yeah, in order to really be a design competition, it has to be apple to apples. So we want everybody to take the same basic program, the same rooms and areas and square footages and requirements, and then answer that problem with their design. And so then you can really take and judge their answer between each entrant. And, you know, I always tell the students that, especially the ones that don't win, I'll say, if it was a different panel of judges, you know, architecture is arbitrary. If it's a different panel of judges, your board might have been the one that made it. You know, so it's don't take it too harshly as as a criticism if you don't win.
But it's a good experience.
Yeah. I think what's really important is not the winning or the losing, but getting out there and learning the design process and learning what it takes to start with basically a blank sheet of paper and then in the end up with this architectural design and learn what it is. What's important to think about as far as the site and the views and materials and the space and then, you know, all the requirements that we've put upon them, you know, with the program, and then synthesize all that together into this final answer. And once you've gone through that process a few times, it starts to get easier and easier. And what's interesting is a lot of the students that are entering this will be the first, like, full-blown design building they've ever done. And so their first year, you know, some of their designs don't come out so well, but then you can usually tell the people who have done it maybe 2 years, sometimes 3 years in a row, and they really start to get it. They start to learn what it is to design, what it is, what's important, how to set their priorities. And a lot of the students that will win are entering work that we think is equivalent to, you know, freshman year, maybe sophomore year college work.
So it could be, it could actually end up be something that helps them determine their career goals or even get into college.
Yeah, absolutely. It seems like almost every year somebody comes up at the end of the competition, they're like, you know, I'd never really thought about architecture or design, but doing this and going through the program, it's really, you know, I found it really engaging and I was really excited about it. Now I'm thinking about going on to architecture school. And so this has kind of been the stepping stone for 40 plus years for students, you know, to possibly enter into the design profession and architecture.
Are there a lot of programs like this around the country?
It sort of depends on the state. The program is sponsored or presented by AIA Indianapolis, which is the American Institute of Architects.
Tell us more about AIA.
Well, the AIA is, like I said, is the American Institute of Architects. It's a it's kind of a trade organization that brings local architects together. There's four architectural chapters in Indiana, and we have you know, educational programs. We do a lot of continuing education. We'll lobby to the state house and on legislation. We're active in the city planning and politics, and sort of have our fingers in all kinds of fields that might be of interest to architecture. And what we're really trying to do is serve as the voice to the community of the architectural profession.
Whereas an individual firm like CSO couldn't do that, but coming together through an AIA chapter, you can.
Correct.
Yeah.
Right.
So back to this, the design challenge again. If this were someone coming to CSO, they would have an actual physical site. Do you choose an actual physical site that the students can look at, or is this entirely fictional?
We've done it both ways. Last year, we actually chose a physical site. Our site was the Pan Am Plaza right downtown.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the things that we did last year was we gave them Google Maps addresses. So students who aren't even necessarily in Indiana could log into Google Maps, and they can look on Street View, and they can, you know, kind of pan around and see the site. And we took some pictures of the site so they could draw over top of the pictures. This year, we went a slightly different direction with the site, where we created a fictional site for them, but we modeled it for them in three dimensions.
Ah.
And so students that are using, you know, some of the more advanced three-dimensional software can download the site from the website, and they'll be able to pick that up and spin it around and really sort of get into it. But at the same time, we've also taken that site and basically sliced through it. And then we've given them a flat view of the site in section and in perspective. So students using pen and paper and more, you know, traditional methods could sit down with those base plans that we've used and still do the same sort of thing. So hopefully it's not an advantage one way or the other,
sure,
whether you have the software or not. But it more and more as the years go by, more students are using that software because it's being taught in the classrooms and in the school. The class is actually in Revit is the most popular of the mm-hmm. three-dimensional programs.
And for all of you English majors out there who've just been hearing blah, 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 math, blah, 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 measurement, blah, 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 sketching, there's a communications component of this competition.
That's true. We always say that, especially at architecture school, you realize that no matter how well your design is executed, unless you can really convince somebody else that your design is really well executed, it doesn't quite matter. And so one of the things that we try to do, in addition to encouraging the students to have a strong design, is for them to tell us why design is so strong. And we think that works both ways. It helps the judges be able to read through there and understand what they were trying to convey, their intent, because, you know, maybe you don't have all the skills necessary to really convey those ideas yet. But if you can write it out, we can kind of cut you some slack and be like, all right, well, you know, it's a good effort. I see what they're trying to go for there. But at the same time, if you're also forced to sit down and write out what it is that's special about your design, you start thinking through those things, and then that forces you to go back and maybe you make your design better. And so the written component of it informs the actual the piece of architecture itself.
And speaking of communication, you're using Facebook and starting to get into YouTube, or soon to get into YouTube to help communicate with students, because that's where they are.
Right, because that's where the high school students are. We wanted to have some sort of medium where they could log in. And, you know, we'll post little updates about the competition. As it's getting closer to the deadline, we'll post hints and tricks and tips, things they might think about as far as putting their board together and sort of layout ideas. And there's also photographs of past competitions and past boards and all kinds of fun stuff up on our Facebook page. So we try to make it more interactive and more engaging for the students. And then with YouTube, we haven't quite figured it out yet, but what I'd like to do eventually is make some sort of online challenge where students could personally present their boards themselves to the judges. And so now what happens is the students will send us their entry board, which is basically a 24 by 36 sheet of paper mounted on a board, and we'll look at them. And on YouTube, I can imagine the students either standing in front of that and presenting it to us, or I could imagine if they're using these 3D programs, they can create fly-throughs and walk-throughs and, like, video presentations to also sell their designs to us.
So hint to lots teachers in lots of other high school departments, you might be getting the help me request from some of the students who enter this competition.
That's true, and actually the whole YouTube idea was actually an idea that came to us from a high school teacher. He sent me an email and said, hey, what do you think about this? And I was like, oh, that's a great idea. So now we just need to figure out how to make it work.
Sharon Gamble with CSO architect Brandon Farley. The Indiana High School Architectural Design Competition attracts around 150 entries a year, but the competition's organizers would like to reach more students, teachers, and parents. There's a workshop for all competition entrants on Saturday, February 9th at CSO Architects headquarters, and the competition deadline is Friday, March 29th at 5 p.m. You can learn much more, including how you can see the creations of these young designers, at aiaindiana.org. That's aiaindiana.org, and then HS Competition. So aiaindiana.org/HS Competition. Sharon.
Yes.
Happy New Year, Sharon.
Happy
it's
New
time
Year.
To put down the noisemakers.
Oh, but it makes all the confetti go in the air. It's so pretty.
Well, happy new. Did you have a good New Year?
I had a great New Year's. How about you?
Very good as well.
Did you make some resolutions?
I'm working through them right now.
Okay.
We'll see how long they last.
It's only the first week of the year.
That's
hang
right.
In there.
You know, and of course, I mean, one resolution is to always go do and see more art in town. So here are some ideas on the calendar we call.
What'll we do?
There you go. So what are you thinking about doing this weekend?
Well, actually, I have some friends. This is not something I'm going to do, but I have some friends who are into handbells. And on Thursday, January 10th, the Circle City Ringers are going to have auditions, open auditions for their handbell choir. If you've never heard them and you like handbells, man, you need to check this out. And if you are a performer, especially if you are comfortable ringing bass and battery bells, if you're a handbell...
Battery bell?
Bass
okay.
and battery
okay.
bells. If you're a handbell performer, that will mean
means.
Something to you. If it doesn't mean anything to you, you probably want to go hear them and not audition. But you can get more information at circlecityringers.org or shoot an email to info@circlecityringers.org and get an actual time to audition. Once again, those auditions are coming up on Thursday, January 10th.
Okay, well, there's a lot of stuff going on at the Fringe in January. They've got coming up Going, Going, Gone. That's the monthly play concocted by Lou Harry and John Thomas. First Sunday of every month, so that's coming up on January 6th.
With special guest performers.
With special guest performers every time. And not only do you get to see a show, but you get free bidding money because it's a one of a kind. It started at the Fringe, and it's this live auction action comedy. It's a lot of fun. You got to see it to understand
it
what
fun.
I'm talking about.
Yeah, you're right.
But
it's an experience.
It's very cool. But a lot of other stuff going on at the Fringe in January. Along with Going, Going, Gone, they've got a Jabberwocky with Storytelling Arts coming up on the 8th. And then their Retro Variety Game Show on the 11th. And the third annual Winter Magic Fest, which is taking place. And this is also taking place at Indiana Landmarks. And this is going through Fringe January 18th through the 20th, which I am looking forward to see very, very much. A lot of great stuff there. You can get the whole schedule for all the stuff going on at Fringe in January at indiefringe.org. So most of this takes place at the Fringe building, which is just off Mass Ave, but the third annual Winter Magic Fest is taking place at Indiana Landmarks Center on Central Avenue, so that'll be a great stage for some really great magic.
And because it's radio, dear friends,
yes.
You didn't get to see this, but Travis just did a magic trick as he was talking about the Midwinter Magic Festival.
I just made the microphone disappear
and
then come
back.
You did
indeed. And if that's not enough magic for you, you can have dinner with a magic show at the Propylaeum on January 6th. Then the 25th, there's a 7 o'clock dinner and show, and this is appropriate for children 12 and up, and what's included is a three-course dinner and a magic show, an hour of great magic performed by local magicians. Doors open at 6 p.m. Again, the dates of the dinner and a magic show at the Propylaeum, January 6th and the 25th, so check that out.
Propylaeum has a lot of events coming up. I mean, not just the magic show, but they're doing different things with different dinners and hobbies and lots of great events going on there and stuff. And you can get the whole schedule for all that at thepropylaeum.org. That's a little tricky. So here we go. You ready? That's propylaeum.org. And they're on Delaware Street. But I've just been really amazed by all the different things they've got going on.
That's a magical thing that you spelled that.
Oh,
I'm so impressed.
Oh, thanks.
Yay. Hey, if you're feeling a little cooped up with kids home for winter break and you want to get out and see something sort of mind-expanding, think about going to the Idlejord. You'll learn more about this soon with an interview on The Art of the Matter, but don't forget that great National Geographic Greatest Photographs of the American West exhibit is up at the Idlejord right now. The National Geographic gathered these over a span of 125 years, going back to the earlier days of photography, and you can just see some astonishing things. That exhibit is on display through February 10th, so you have a little bit of time, but why not pack the kids in the car and go see some beautiful images of the Great West?
Hey, something else to do with the kids. If you didn't get a chance to get up to Connor Prairie during the holidays, there is still a chance to get up there this weekend to see the Gingerbread Village and also enjoy Winter Fun Days, which is really cool. They're doing a sort of a post-holiday wintertime fun. They've got the Indian Camp dealing with science of baking and a chocolate making demonstration, and the Featherston Barn, and this is good, Sharon. You can also learn about winter survival skills.
Those might be handy.
They might come in handy, like trapping and fire starting and making hot cocoa. And so all that, along with the Gingerbread Village, is going on
at Connor
Prairie. One of these
things is not like the other.
That's very fun. It's good stuff. So that's going on through this weekend, through the 6th at Connor Prairie.
Also family friendly at Booth Tarkington Civic Theater, Joseph and the amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, full of beautiful and catchy music that your kids might be bopping to in the car, singing to you on the way home, and spectacular costumes performances through this Saturday, January 5th, so you better plan very soon.
Go, 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 Joseph.
Go, go, go.
Hey, at the State Fairgrounds this weekend, two of my actually favorite shows, Sharon, the Indiana on the Fly and the Great Train Expo. I'm so excited about these.
Fishing and trains.
I know. I mean,
boy.
What more do you need?
Wow.
And now the fly fishing show is only on Saturday. And again, that's Indiana on the Fly. That's from 9 to 4 on Saturday in the Agriculture Horticulture Building. And it is such a cool exhibit each and every year. They've got author talks. They've got workshops. They've got demonstrations of fly tying. They've got tons of vendors you can buy from. Very neat stuff. And then the Great Train Expo is Friday and Saturday in the Marsh Blue Ribbon Pavilion, and that's from 10 to 4 both days, and always lots of fun as well, especially maybe if you got a train for Christmas and you need some accessories or like a new tunnel or some new buildings, then check out the Train Expo. I'm just saying.
I was just picturing you tying up those flies, but you know, that's a whole other conversation. Yes, I know. Don't write to artofthematter@wfyi.org. I know what fly tying is. Don't worry. I am a girl who has fished in the past. If one of your New Year's resolutions was this, you looked around your home and you thought, we need new art. Think about going to the Hoosier Salon's Broad Ripple Gallery. That's at 714 East 65th Street. Their Art for the Holidays exhibition features Hoosier Salon artists, including James Willie Faust, Judith Lewis, Ronald Mack, C.W. Mundy, and as they say, more. And that exhibit is open to the public through this Saturday, January 5th. So you have a sort of a last chance to buy some art from this exhibit for your home.
Cool. Hey, last thing I got is Eternal James Dean. It is still going on. In fact, it goes on all the way through June. So there's still plenty of time to go check it out. But what are you waiting for? It's the James Dean exhibit at the Indiana State Museum.
Fantastic. Last thing I have, plan ahead a little bit. If you want to hear some great jazz, Kurt Elling, the great Grammy award-winning jazz vocalist, is going to bring a little bit of New York City to Indy on January 19th at 7 and 9:30 p.m. at the Cabaret on the Columbia Club. And he does, among other things, reconfigured doo-wop and upgraded soul, including songs such as Come Fly With Me, You Send Me on Broadway, and A House Is Not a Home. And as they say, much, much more.
Much more.
Cabaret at the Columbia Club, January 19th at 7 and 9:30.
Sounds like some great ways, great ideas to get your new year started.
That's right.
Okay.
So happy 2013, and we'll be back next week with more things to do, see, and enjoy on
What Do We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on wfyi.org.
Thinking of selling your car, boat, motorcycle, truck, or other vehicle? Donate it to WFYI instead. When you donate your vehicle to WFYI, you're supporting all of your favorite programs. Plus, you can receive a tax deduction when you itemize your return. Here's how it works. Call 1-855-788-WFYI. That's 1-855-788-9394. Or visit WFYI.org/vehicle and we'll take care of the rest. We'll even pick up your vehicle at no cost to you. Once your vehicle has been sold, you'll get
get a receipt for your tax records, and the sale proceeds will be donated to WFYI in your name. You'll also receive a one-year membership to WFYI, including the Members Magazine and a two-for-one discount member card. Turn something you don't need into something you really want.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep.
To learn more about vehicle donation, call toll-free 1-855-788-WFYI. That's 1-855-788-9394. Or visit WFYI.org/vehicle.
Jersey Boys is the popular musical about Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons and the rise to fame. The touring show is coming back to Indianapolis from January 9th through the 20th at the Old National Center at the Murat. And Travis DiNicola spoke to actor Nick Cosgrove, who plays Frankie Valli.
Nick, thanks so much for taking the time to chat with us on Art of the Matter, and very much looking forward to seeing you in Indianapolis.
Oh, we're getting so excited to come head to you guys. We're working our way back to you guys.
Oh, nice. Well done. Hey, so tell me a bit, how long have you been on tour playing Frankie Valli? This is, what a great role. I mean, how fun for you. But how long have you been doing this now?
Well, I joined the company in January of this year.
Okay.
So my first performance was January 12th down in Fort Lauderdale. So we've been hitting a lot of really great cities so far. And it's the perfect opportunity to get to see parts of the country that you've never seen before, and on top of it, it doesn't hurt to be playing your dream role in your dream show. So,
neat. Now, really, was it your dream role? I mean, had you seen the show before and thought, man, I want to do that?
Yeah, I mean, when I was 17, 6 years ago, I'm 24 now, so I was a junior in high school, I saw this show for the first time at the Bank of America Theater in my hometown in Chicago, and I just remember sitting there and saying to myself, I want to train to do that.
Really?
So, I went to Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh and got my BFA. And, always I feel like I'm lucky that I was a boy soprano and I always had that, range to my voice, but I never got the opportunity to use that part of my voice in any shows or any, in any music.
Sure. So yeah, I mean, the opportunities are pretty limited, yeah.
Someone, this guy play Frankie Valli and sing 27 songs within the course of 2.5 hours. I mean, I was just amazed, the first time I saw the show. And so it continued to be a dream role of mine.
Nick, let me ask you about that first time you saw the show. Were you familiar with Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons music a whole lot? I mean, I know that when I first saw the show, and it was maybe about 3-4 years ago or so, and, I knew some of the music. I can't say I was a big fan, but, I liked it. It was fine. But I saw the show, and I was just blown away. I mean, the story, the way it's produced, it's such a fun, incredibly overwhelming production of a great musical. I became a fan because of the show. But were you a fan before you saw the show or because of the show?
Well, I feel like I lucked out. My mom, growing up, didn't let me listen to anything but Oldies 104.3. So I feel like I'm one of the luckier, generations of our time, although I'm 24. I grew up listening to The Temptations and, a lot of Motown, Stevie Wonder, Etta James, Frank Sinatra. So, I mean, I have such an appreciation and love for this music. Can't Take My Eyes Off You was the first Frankie Valli tune that I had ever heard. So I think that's the coolest part is, being in the show and getting to sing this music every night, it does bring up a lot of memories of my childhood of listening to this music. My mom had it playing in the car radio every time we'd be in the car. So
tell me a bit more then about your process. I mean, once you saw the show, you're 16, you're obviously already, you're a singer, you're involved in theater, you decide to go to Carnegie Mellon. It sounds like you were consciously working on, I am going to get this role when I'm ready. I mean, how did you train for that? Or how did you, choose your studies based on that?
Well, I mean, when I graduated in May of 2010, I mean, I got an agent out of my senior showcase. And, when you meet with agents, they're always asking, what roles do you think you're right for? What do you see doing in this business? What shows would you like to be in? And so, I mean, I had always expressed my, my passion of being in this show. And truthfully, I mean, I thought that I was too young, to be playing Frankie Valli in the first place. I mean, he goes from the course of age 15 to 50.
Yeah.
Throughout the course of 2.5 hours. So, I always wanted to be a part of it, but I thought that I might be too young to be in the show. But, I mean, that's kind of the joys of getting to be an actor in the theater, that you put a little makeup on, and a lot of it is you you getting to create the journey of his life in the 2.5 hours. You know, a lot of it is vocally demanding, you know, even just
sure.
speaking parts of the show. I feel like I've altered my speaking voice just to sound more mature and sound more of age. So that's kind of been the joys of getting to go through the process of creating my own version of Frankie Valli in the show.
Now, do you physically, you know, I mean, do you look a little bit like Frankie Valli, you know, already? Or, I mean, height-wise, hair-wise?
I do, yeah. I mean, I'm 50% Italian, and mm-hmm. the other half is Irish and German, but my mom's maiden name is Scaniccio.
Nice.
So it runs in the family, that's for sure. But, yeah, I'm about 5'8", and mm-hmm. A little thin in the face, which he was as well, you know, when he was in his 20s. So I'm not going to say I look exactly like him, but I think a little bit, sure.
Sure. Now, have you had a chance to meet Mr. Valli at all yourself?
Luckily, yes.
Yeah? How was that?
I saw his show at the Chicago Theater the last Saturday that we were playing in Chicago, so I got to bring my parents backstage and meet him. I mean, he's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that he's in his late 70s and he still sounds like he's in his 20s, he's amazing. I mean,
yeah.
He still has this incredible stage presence. Everybody loves him, you know, and he's just a really down-to-earth guy. When I got to speak with him after the show, he's just really, really... a really cool guy.
Do you know if he's had a chance to see you perform?
He has not. Not yet.
Think that might happen?
He's seen the show many times, let's
yep.
just say that, over the course of
the
past 6 years that the show has been out. But, you know, especially with us on the road that we're constantly in different cities, no, he hasn't seen me play it yet.
That might be a little nerve-wracking, but could be pretty cool.
Well, you know, the thing, too, is, I mean, both him and Bob Gaudio, I mean, saw my final audition, they have to approve as
a cast
okay. member.
Interesting.
So, I
didn't know that.
He did at least see me audition for the show, but he hasn't seen me do the full show.
Got it. Okay. That's very cool. I wasn't aware of that.
Oh, well, that's the best part is, you know, they still are completely involved in casting and have their hands in the project. I mean, I would want to be if it was people portraying my life on stage. So if anything, I have a lot of respect for them that they're still so involved in the casting process, absolutely.
And Bob Gaudio's was part of the Four Seasons and wrote the show and is one of the producers, I believe, of the show and obviously very involved with them. I mean, he's as much a part of the story as Frankie Valli is.
Correct.
So what is your favorite part of the show? And I ask sort of for maybe those people who haven't seen the show yet are wondering, should I go see it or not? You know, what is it about you that you just love about the show?
Well, one of my favorite moments in the show is when Bob Gaudio is first introduced to the other three guys, and you know he sits down at the piano and plays "Cry for Me," and we slowly one-on-one add to the sound, and we mm-hmm. create our sound, you know, our group's sound for the first time, and it's a very magical moment every night, you know, getting to create these harmonies together and that form the first time that the band becomes the Four Seasons. You know, it's really exciting.
Yeah.
And I think what's really cool for the audience is they become the audience members of 1963. You know, they become,
mm-hmm.
you feel like you're transported back in time, which I think is kind of the magical part about this show.
It is. And there's moments where you feel like you are in the audience of the concert, and that's just such a great feeling.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you get the best of both worlds. I mean, it's a rock concert meets an incredibly well-scripted play.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get kind of like a backstage VH1 pass to the behind-the-scenes footage of these guys' lives, you know, that it wasn't just an overnight sensation, that they went through a lot of ups and downs. You know, you see the behind-the-scenes of their family life, you know, failed marriages, and that it wasn't just a walk in the park. So I think that's what's kind of cool, too, is that the generation that grew up with this music and saw them perform, you know, they got to see all the exterior and the successes, you know, and all the great tunes and everything else. But that's the coolest part about the show is you see what really went on behind the scenes.
Well, and you mentioned that, you know, that it's a great play too. I mean, the thing is, the script is so strong that there's so much story and history there. Part of it's, I mean, really moving. Part of it's funny. I mean, you know, there's a lot of, I remember specifically the scene that goes into performing "Oh What a Night," and it's just hysterical.
Oh yeah. I mean, and that they were mixed up with the mob. I mean,
yeah.
This show is really, we say that it's the husbands drag their wives to, because it's kind of like you're watching you know, a Bronx Tale, but on stage with amazing music, you know. So it is really cool to see the guys in the audience cheering just as loudly, you know, because it's cool. It's a slick show, which it's really interesting to see both, you know, women and men connecting to.
Now, the tour that's coming here, Indianapolis has had the tour here once before, but you weren't a part of it then. Have you been to Indianapolis yourself before, or will this be your first time?
This will be my first time visiting. Yeah. I mean, I'm a Midwest boy, but I have yet to visit, so I'm actually really excited to, you know, check out the museums and find my way around and find some good restaurants. It'll be fun.
Well, it's the show's playing at the Marat, and there's a lot of some of the best restaurants in town up and down Mass Ave, right along where the Marat Theater is. So that should be easy for you.
Fantastic.
Great. Hey, Nick, I really appreciate your time today, and great to chat with you. We can't wait to see you here in Indianapolis, and happy holidays to you.
Travis DiNicola with Nick Cosgrove, who plays Frankie Valli in the touring production of Jersey Boys, which comes to Indianapolis from January 9th through the 20th. Tickets are available at the Murat box office or visit BroadwayTour.net, BroadwayTour.net. Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buselli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com. Please listen to The Art of the Matter next week, Thursday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 7 a.m., when I'll check into the final Fridays at the IMA.
I'll be amazed by magician David Rinaldi.
And I'll explore the National Geographic exhibit at the Eideljorg.
So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on WFYI for your information.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Central Indiana and Indianapolis. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's show was edited by Melissa Davis and produced by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.